Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to All Stats Aren't We, a podcast in which Leeds fans cast their combined eye over goings-on at Elland Road, giving scrutiny to the underlying statistics and tactical footings at work at Leeds United. I'm John McKenzie, the permavoid pitch preparation of the podcast. Don't mind me, I'm seeding nicely. And I'm joined by the junior of the podcast, Tom Alderson. No, seriously, he's very young. And finally, the Diego Llorente Euros minutes of the podcast. Might as well have not turned up. It's Darren Driver. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm all right, thanks, John. I had my second jab this morning, so I'm now fully Wi-Fi'd up, which is nice. There is an interesting parallel here with the Llorente thing, actually, because for the last few weeks, the podcast has gone back to the sort of measured control of the Halcyon, McKenzie and Hobbs days, and has got pretty good results. I think we'd get to a semi-final and maybe lose on penalties. But there'll definitely be a band of fans who are sort of clamouring for my Llorentean lack of control, my inability to read what's happening, and the risk of me blowing at any moment. So I am glad to be back. How are you doing, John? You all right?
Yeah, it's been a while since you've been on.
Yeah, I think the last one I was on was the one that I hosted, and I just figured that I did such a bad job that you decided never to have me back again.
That's not true at all. Another man who is also on this podcast. I usually try and think of a segue, but I've really blown it. So I'll just say, Tom, how are you doing?
I'm not too bad. I watched the Spain-Italy game last night, actually. I thought, despite, like, even though for 60 minutes it was a 0-0, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a really good quality match.
It was. Mm. And what was good as well is that I fell asleep at the start of extra time and woke up just in time for penalties, so I missed the shit bit.
Well, that's perfect then. You got everything you needed.
Yeah, it was a really high quality game, actually, which I think would be our criticism of international football usually, that it isn't particularly interesting from a tactical point of view, but that was definitely high standard football, high quality, and some interesting tactical stuff going on as well. So yeah, probably the game that deserved to be the final, let's say that. I can't see that going down badly anyway. Right, before we get into this week's episode, which is controversially titled How to Beat Leeds United, let's go through a little bit of the news stuff. The big news story is Junior Firpo has signed from Barcelona for a fee in the region of £13 million. I think it was, is it a four-year deal? I can't even remember how many.
Three or four.
Left back from Barcelona. We have plenty of content out there if you want to find out more. There is a Medium piece where Josh Hobbs has gone through and done a scouting report using video, talking about the pros and cons. We also have a author's list on our Patreon channel, if that sounds interesting to you, with Josh and myself and Tom talking through stuff about Junior, and also a video report on our Patreon channel as well. So if any of that sounds interesting to you, head over to www.patreon.com/allstatsaren'twe and check it out. Darren, you are a person who has not pontificated on the signing on this channel yet, so we'll go to you first. What's your take on it?
I think to a degree it looks like a pretty smart signing. I think he will help us with some of the issues that we've had. I think he looks fairly neat and tidy in possession. I think he looks like he's able to kind of find a pass when he's being pressed. I think he's got really good mobility, and I think he'll really support our attacking game. I have to say that, you know, I think that although we all had criticisms of Alioski, I think he did contribute a lot in our attacking game. So I'm not necessarily expecting huge improvements from that point of view. Maybe a more consistent quality, perhaps. Whereas I think Alioski could be a bit wild. But the one thing that I am really hoping for and will be interested to see is whether Junior can help us with our, some of our issues in terms of being pressed, and particularly in that left back area where we've tended to give up possession quite readily through the last season. I think my assessment of his defensive stuff, really, having had only a quick look at him, is that he looks sort of about the same level as Alioski, that he's got some of the same flaws in terms of, you know, some of his one-to-one defending. But I think as we've all said, that in our system, actually the burden isn't hugely defensive on that position, and I think we're just going to have to put up with that. One of the things that I am really pleased about, though, and I don't think this has been spoken about enough, is that with Alioski moving out and Junior taking the number three shirt, it means our left back is wearing number three and our most creative attacking player is wearing 10, which means that nature's healing itself, and confused elderly men like me can stop grumbling about our left back wearing number 10. So I am pleased about that.
Okay, boomer. I totally agree with you. I think it's a move we needed to be making. We were having a chat on the in the Twitter group yesterday and pointing out how few settled left backs we've had, so it'd be nice to get one coming in and knowing that he's the starter, and knowing that he's I don't want to say specialist, because I don't think it's quite so simple as just saying you have a specialist left back and that's fine. He's obviously going to be expected to be fairly flexible. We've talked about this before, about how Bielsa expects his left back to be able to drop in, play defensively, to move inside and play as a central midfielder, and also move into a wide positions as well. But sounds like good noises coming from the training sessions. Apparently put up the best fitness numbers in the early the early training assessment, so he's clearly going to fit into the system quite well. He's obviously wildly athletic, and I think that'll be something that'd be really even with Alioski's, I guess, scurrying pressing, I think he'll probably add on top of that as well. And I don't worry too much about the defensive side of things either. I guess my worries are how useful he's going to be in terms of the build up. But I think he'll definitely be better than Alioski. So I don't think there's any worries there. And I think there's a lot of people very excited about him in an attacking sense. But I'm not sure if he's going to be quite as good as people are making out, but again, he's obviously going to be very, very dangerous if he's got space in front of him to drive into and get those low crosses in. Tom Alderson, you've had you've had a week to cogitate on this. Have you got anything that you wanted to add? Any opinion changes on Firpo at all?
Nothing to add, really. I don't think my opinion's changed. I think for me, the main thing is just the passing out from the back, and I think that he will be an improvement on that, so that should definitely help us next year.
Well, let's move on, quickly cover a little of the other news. We've had a lot of movement in very boring areas, I'd say. So we upgraded Harrison from a loan to a permanent option for 11 million. We've extended Dallas till 2024. We've had news of a couple of 23s players going out on loan. So Mateusz Bogos has gone to Ibiza. That was announced this morning, last week. Mikhail Monton-Morcombe was announced as well, and also Rafa Majica, the player who we've owned but never really seen full-time to Las Palmas, so that's the end of him. Nice to see a little bit of squad churn going on, and then obviously the final bit of news is Gianni leaving on a free. Tom Alderson, memories of Gianni Alioski?
That he was just crazy, like on and off the pitch. I think for me, it's a shame that he didn't sort of get that moment that Berardi and Pablo got on the last day. So he's kind of just going to leave without a proper goodbye from the fans. But he was an important part last year, even if he was a part that we were frustrated by a lot. And it was an important part when we went up. So I am going to miss him. And I wish him the best wherever he goes.
I've always had quite mixed feelings about Alioski, because I think throughout the time he's been at Leeds, I don't think any player has frustrated me more. In fact, I'd be struggling to think of many players who've frustrated me more during my entire time watching Leeds United. Maybe there's some recency bias going on there. But Yeah, I'll miss his personality, and I think he's probably a really good influence in the dressing room in terms of keeping everybody's energy high and you know, doing stupid dick jokes or whatever it is that he does in the dressing room to keep everyone laughing. But I think from a playing point of view, my view is very much that it is the right time for him to move on. That he goes with, you know, with my respect and my thanks. But promoted players move on. Usually sooner rather than later, and I think that I try not to get too bogged down in the sentiment of it all, and just kind of accept that what's happening is that the club is improving the squad, and that's the right thing to do if the club's going to progress. So I'm on one level, I think it's the right move, and I'm pleased that he'll, you know, get a good contract wherever he ends up next.
Yeah, I think Gianni's a tricky one for us to cover, really, because obviously we focus on the tactical side of the game, and there are obvious weaknesses in his game, but obviously football isn't entirely about the cold hard facts of tactics and
yes, it is. So I'm disagreeing with you now, because that's what we've been told to do by our listeners.
Ignoring Darren for the time being. Obviously, when you are a fan of a club, you can look at the tactics and you can look at the statistics all you want, but you do develop, you know, these sort of unique relationships with players. And Gianni Alioski is a player who it's impossible not to develop one of those relationships with, because he is an interesting guy. He's a fairly uniquely personable guy in a world where I think a lot of players have that beaten out of them at a very early age in terms of PR sessions. And obviously he sort of got around that coming from North Macedonia, and so it's been great having him involved in the squad, because it just gives you something beyond the sort of, yeah, well, at the end of the day I'm just happy with the 3 points, right? Which is what you're never going to get from someone like Gianni Alioski, so he will very much be missed. Right, before we all start bursting into tears, let's move on to the main topic of the day, which is how do we beat Leeds United? So what we're going to do in this episode, and I've been told by Tom Woodhead to caveat this with, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but we don't want Leeds to lose. So just got that clear. But we thought it'd be interesting to do an episode on how opposition sides should be looking to beat Leeds United, and hopefully from that be able to maybe detect a couple of key areas where Leeds have weaknesses, and at the end maybe have a look over that. So we've decided to break it up into a number of different teams that we're going to talk about. So we'll break it into three sections, and in each section we've got three template teams in there as well. You may notice that there are large similarities between our template teams and some of the teams in the Premier League. But what we'll do is we'll go through that. We'll talk about how we would set up with each of these teams against Leeds, and we'll go from there. So let's start at the top of the table. Obviously Leeds had a, well, no, before we do that, actually, let's just talk about what we think are the overarching weaknesses of Leeds United, that if you are an opposition manager, you'd be saying to the team, right, these are all your analysts, right, these are the areas that we're going to specifically focus on. So Darren, we'll go with you first. What would you, let's just have maybe one, and then we'll give Tom one, and we'll see where we go from there.
So I identified five areas, the primary areas where I think Leeds have shown weakness at times. But I'm going to start with a well-structured, well-targeted and intense high press is something that Leeds have consistently failed to deal with in the Premier League last year.
Okay, do you want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, I just think that at times it's been clear that and I'm thinking maybe back to the Arsenal game is probably the primary example of this, that or other games where we've been pressed intelligently out wide, is that we've allowed teams to funnel us into the left back, left wing area, and then really struggle to beat the press there, and quite often turned over possession in really dangerous areas where elite attacking players particularly have been able to get our centre backs or things like that. So I think there's just been a lot of times when that inability to beat the press. I mean, even the first half against Southampton at home, we were really struggling to beat their press. They were putting us under so much pressure. We really struggled to find a way through that until half-time.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you said high press there, but I think you could maybe extend that to like an intelligent press. I think, for example, Brighton don't really press high, but they pushed as wide. Even a team like Crystal Palace, who I think were lucky to beat us, certainly to the tune of 4-1, as they did. But I think even in that game, they pressed us quite well in wide areas as well. So I guess anything that disrupts our build up in the normal phase is something to
it's sort of in our back third or in the middle third, really, are the two areas really where we're vulnerable to that, aren't they?
Yeah, for sure. Tom?
So the one I'm going for is if you can got someone that's like good at dribbling, you can beat your man, because that destroys the man marking system, basically, because then they've got either like a 2-on-1 against one defender or another player has to cover, and then that just creates spaces all over the place. So that's just, yeah, that just causes loads of problems defensively. And there isn't, the way we're sort of kind of getting around that this year is either with Dallas, but also, when we've got that spare centre-back at the back, as Bielsa likes to do, that player drops out and it creates space for every other player on the pitch and causes us loads of problems.
So that's because of the man marking system, you are at a weakness in terms of players being able to lose their markers a lot more easily than a zonal marking system, where players aren't going to respond necessarily to the movement of opposition players. They'll respond to the movement of where the ball is and making sure their zone is covered. Cool. Darren?
The Leeds press being broken, particularly by centre backs spreading wide and being able to kind of eliminate Bamford primarily from being able to press them effectively, has caused us a lot of problems, because that then gives those centre backs sort of free rein to do what they want, whether that's be to carry the ball into the midfield in, you know, maybe some of the ways that Tom's was just describing, or whether that means that one of the Leeds midfield markers has to leave his man and leave him free and leaves on a relatively easy pass if the movement and the passing is intelligent enough by that from that centre back. So that's something which has really caused us problems. And I'm thinking probably Chelsea away, maybe they did that quite a bit, and managed to get Kante on the ball in the midfield free quite a few times as a result of the ball being fed to him by the centre backs.
And I guess the City game that we won,
yep,
where,
yep,
John Stones got a kilometre of progressive carries, which is pretty mind-blowing. Obviously, they didn't make the most of that, but I'm sure we'll talk about City at some point, but they are a team who are very intelligent at manipulating space, and I think that's going to be a oft-repeated tune in this episode, that we talk about teams that have the ability to move opposition players around, create space, are going to cause problems for our man-marking system. Tom, have you got another one?
Yep, so I've got a low block, and I don't think this is just a Leeds thing. I think this is any team in the world struggles against a low block, because you're kind of reliant on either sort of a pattern of play coming off, which is more what you see with like Man City, or you just need that individual moment. And again, that's just something that a team like Man City can deal with, because they've got a lot of better players, and whereas Leeds are kind of looking for, probably Rafinha mostly, or Harrison's putting a good cross, and in previous years it's Pablo has to do that job or no one else. It's not just a Leeds thing, it's just any team in the world struggles against a low block.
Mm-hmm. Darren, have you got?
I've got two more, actually. I thought I had one, but I've got two. One of them is corners. If you're a team that's got somebody who's able to deliver the ball very well, and you've got people who are able to attack the ball well and move well in the box, and I think Leeds are vulnerable to conceding goals there. And I think that's just, although I think there were improvements in the number of times we've conceded towards the end of the season, we've seen throughout Bielsa's reign that this is something which has been a problem, then been solved, then been a problem, then been solved, then been a problem. And I think that pattern will continue. So I don't doubt that there will be times in the forthcoming season when we come up against people who've got that combination of things, and we'll see that apparent Achilles heel come back again.
Tom, do you have any more?
I've got transition written down, and that might kind of come under what Darren said about the coordinated press, because it's like if a team can press us, then they can hit us in transition, either when the man marking system's not in the right place, or if players have gone forward, because like we do tend to commit forward as a team, then if you could put players, Dan James just comes to my head for some reason, I don't know. If you could just get those fast players that can dribble through as quickly, then that's definitely going to cause us problems.
That was my final one as well, but specifically I phrased it as being caught in transition when the midfield balance isn't working correctly, because that's something that we've really struggled to correct throughout the course of the season, I think.
Yeah, turning over in the midfield area was something we did a lot early on, until we became a bit more defensive and didn't really throw centre midfielders beyond the ball at any point. Yeah, good. I would maybe add one more to this list, which I don't know if you guys think what you guys think about this, but I wanted to add back threes perhaps. I think we struggle against teams that play with back threes largely. So I'm thinking Brighton play a back three. Wolves played back threes against us. There's been other teams that have played with a back three against us where we've struggled. Mainly because I think we've talked about the 3-4-3 formation being a really nice formation to mid-block press in and try and smother leads in wide areas, I suppose. And if you do that, then you reduce the opposition. You reduce leads to crossing the ball in from wide areas. And if you have three tall centre backs, then you've basically, you know that the only thing they're going to be able to do is cross from those wide areas, and you know you've got three centre backs in there as well. So I think maybe teams playing a back threes against Leeds would, if you can nullify the thing that Leeds are good at, which is, I think, quick transitions in wide areas. Then you force them to have to cross the ball in, and you cover the options of Leeds necessarily being that dangerous from crosses, when I guess the only real strong header of the ball that you've got is Pat Bamford in the middle.
The back three kind of covers like the defenders dribbling out from the back as well, doesn't it? We kind of fixed that with the pressing last year, but it's still something that I'm not too sure that we're great at dealing with.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Right, well, let's move on then to the three different categories of sides. So we start off with top six sides. So three different teams in here. The team that play 4-2-3-1 with poor coaching, but they've got elite players across the pitch. They don't have much of a tactical approach beyond Inshallah. This is obviously Manchester United. So how would we start thinking about how... I mean, obviously Manchester United are a team who beat us last season. And then didn't in the second fixture. How would we go about, as Manchester United coach, at approaching the Leeds game?
For this one as well, I think could have been Frank Lampard's Chelsea as well a little bit. But this was actually more interesting when I was digging into it, because obviously the first game was 6-2 and it just was all our weaknesses were exploited. Whereas the second one, they didn't really do it. And I think the difference was that... they didn't play Pogba or Rashford in the second game, I don't think, because I think that it was around that time when they had...
I think Rashford did play, but I think it didn't look like he was comfortable. I think he was struggling.
Was he up front or something? And I think that might have nullified him.
Yeah, they didn't play Cavani, did they, in that game?
Yeah, that's right.
But yeah, so like a player like Cavani, just it's that movement and Pogba and Rashford's ability to dribble at a player and beat the man is something that definitely causes problems. So... If that was me doing that, I'd be playing Pogba, Rashford in probably on both wings and getting them just to try and beat their man, because then that'll cause the problems. And it depends what sort of style Leeds are going for, because in the first game, obviously, we were much easier to catch in transition. So a player like Dan James obviously causes problems. But in the second game, Dan James, we kind of saw Dan James nullified by the fact that we kind of sit a bit deeper. Probably because Dallas was playing, that probably helped us a bit. That's one that maybe, I don't know, you start on the bench and then go for. And then the last ones, I'd just be getting Maguire just to dribble out from the back as much as I can, just to cause us problems that way.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I think to a degree, but I think the one thing that I would say is that in the second game, the one thing that they didn't do was attempt to get their more creative players on the ball in deeper areas where I think they could have turned and run at the Leeds midfield and done some damage. So I think that when I dug into the numbers of that second game for the end of season review, and it was really clear that really the centre backs had as much, Leeds were content to let the centre backs carry the ball as deep as they wanted, because they knew that they were then going to be able to pick up the more dangerous players in a you know, kind of quite structured way. Whereas I think that if a team like that, that's got a lot of individually skillful attacking players, can get them on the ball kind of maybe around halfway or a little bit deeper, and get them to turn and run directly at the Leeds midfield, I think they've got a better chance of, to use the Bielsa term, of unbalancing the Leeds man marking system and finding space. And I think that a tactic, you know, if somebody was, you know, tactically smart, I think that's probably one of the things that they would try and do. And also maybe try and isolate your more skillful attacking players against Leeds' weakest defensive link, which I think a lot of the times last season was in the left back area. So try and get, you know, whichever skillful attacking player you've got on the right hand side, and try and overload them with maybe a full back, maybe not with Wan-Bissaka for Man United because it's not really his game, but maybe to try and create, you know, dangerous situations by unbalancing Leeds' left hand side would be something that you might want to be looking at doing.
I'm going to offer maybe a slightly different approach to this one, which is that I think Manchester United's real upside comes from their counter-attacking play. And I think part of the problem of what they did last time was that they tried to be just too transitional in the way that they played. Whereas what I think they should try and do is be even more transitional, and so sit really deep.
Try draws out.
Draw Leeds out, yeah. Because I think if you give Leeds the space, they will build up through it, and you can draw them into wide areas. And I would just sit a little bit deeper, look to press the ball, and then just release. I mean, they're going to have Jadon Sancho next season. You could have Rashford on one side. You could use Dan James as well on the other. They've got Cavani, an elite forward. They've got Pogba, who can play amazing passes. I would sit deep, draw Leeds out, create space in behind and try and exploit it. Because I think the problem is that if you try and do what they did in the second game of last season, you then are going to have to require some sort of attacking, I suppose, logic or interchange or process whereby you are moving players around. And I don't think they can do that when Leeds are in a slightly more low block. So if I was approaching this game, I think I would sit deep and just try and draw them out and create that space and just hit them bang, bang, bang long. But the problem is, I think, and this is maybe something that happened a lot last season, is that Premier League sides are a little bit arrogant, I think, and so they aren't willing to be like, well, let's just sit deeper against a team like Leeds and then just use our real strength, which is counter-attacking at pace.
I suspect Leeds might have refused to move, you know, in that second game, John. I think that Leeds had been so badly burned by the Old Trafford experience that I think that there was a real clear reluctance to kind of get involved in the game as an attacking force at all. And in fact, I do think that we definitely played to nullify that idea of even being drawn out. That's just my sense. I don't know what you guys think.
No, I'd probably agree with that. I think we'd have probably had I don't think we'd have sort of overloaded in the way that we normally do, and I don't think you probably wouldn't have seen like Ayling or Alioski sort of pressing on as much, just out of fear of getting caught in the same way we did in the first game. So yeah, I'd agree with that.
I think that you maybe do run that risk, but I think that it's hard to not do that. I think especially for a team like Leeds who are doing build up, right? You are trying to move the ball from one area to another, and regardless of whether or not the opposition are putting pressure on you, you're still going to do that. You're not simply going to be like, wait a minute, they're trying to draw us out here. If it didn't work, I would just simply switch and do what they probably should have done in the second game, which is played Pogba and Cavani from the start and just caused us problems through having just players who can create those moments. Pogba can find Cavani, Rashford. We've talked about Jadon Sancho. We've also got Bruno Fernandes, who is a player who is has an incredible ability to find dangerous players in the box as well. But I think that would be the best way for them to kick off. Just see if they can get anything. And yeah, okay, Leeds might sit back eventually when they realise that that's what was happening. But I think at that point you then change things up. I just think the most dangerous upside of a team like Manchester United is going to be that. But let's move on to talk about another Manchester side. So play 4-3-3, maybe 4-2-3-1 occasionally, with good coaching and elite players across the pitch using positional play. So Manchester City.
I think to a degree with Man City, I think what needs to happen is that they just need to trust their inherent talent, their inherent process, and they need to concentrate on moving the ball, moving Leeds' man marking system around, and kind of letting the facts that they've got, you know, the likes of Kevin De Bruyne and other people of you know, equal or nearly equal ability, try and pick and find holes in the Leeds system, because they know that Leeds are not going to play, you know, necessarily with a low block. They know that the Leeds man marking system can be exploited with good movement, and to a degree, I think it would just be about letting that team play their natural game, the game that they've been coached in for all that time, and letting them do some damage, and also making sure that their press is effective. Because if you think back to the City game at Elland Road, in the first 20 minutes, it was their press that really mullered us, not the stuff they did with the ball. So trying to really make sure that they press Leeds into submission and try and get an early goal, and then that would obviously create space, because Leeds would then have to come out a little bit more, or would be allowed to come out a little bit more, and then we'd be ringing the game state klaxon, I think, at that point, and City would be able to pick, you know, with the ability they've got, City should be able to pick Leeds off.
Yeah, I feel as though we maybe got away with City a little bit last season. I think they were obviously a little bit at sea at the beginning of the season, and we really gave them a good game in that first fixture, especially because I think Guardiola too quickly sort of tried to trade blows in a transitional game, when I think they should have just carried on plugging away and doing what they do, which is what they did. I think towards the end, actually, they dropped a little bit deeper and then started trying to break us down, and they started controlling the game again. And then in the second game, they did enough probably to win the game, and they were playing their pretty much second team as well. So I'm very much with you, Darren. This is probably a case for City of just being like, stick by your principles, trust the process, and most of the time you're going to win games like that.
I think we've said a few times, haven't we, that in big games, I think Guardiola, or in games that Guardiola sees as big, i.e. when he's coming up against Bielsa rather than coming up against Leeds United, that he just kind of tend to have a tendency to try and overcomplicate things at times. And actually, my view is very much, if you put his best 11 players up against Leeds' best 11 players with their system, they should win, you know, 7 times out of 10, 8 times out of 10.
I think it's that he respects managers tactically. I think that's the problem. So for someone like Bielsa, he almost doesn't trust himself to be able to beat Bielsa by playing his tactics. So he has to try and do something different. I think that's what that's been his criticism in the Champions League as well, is that it's almost like he feels as though to win those big games, he has to do something out of the ordinary rather than just doing the things that City do well from the off anyway. Tom, would you add anything to what we've said?
Nothing really to add. I just think with if it's City as the example, that they've got, because of the nature of those elite players, they can just hit all those. I think I've got 7 written down that we discussed at first. They can just kind of hit those, and they can kind of interchange between them. So if you just kind of leave them to do their own thing, they'll eventually find a weakness in us that will cause us problems and beat us.
So the third team in this section, we've talked about the 3-4-3 already. There's not many teams actually who play that way, I don't think, in the top six. So it'd be interesting to talk about a 3-4-3 with good coaching and elite players across the pitch, maybe slightly more defensive in tenor, which is what Thomas Tuchel's Chelsea were like when they played against us. We got a 0-0 draw against them. Again, obviously that was early in Tuchel's tenure, and he was maybe a little bit slow getting the attacking roots out of his team, but I no doubt with a pre-season under their belt, Chelsea are going to look pretty dangerous next season, playing probably in this 3-4-3 formation. So Tom, what do you make of Tuchel's Chelsea?
Chelsea are kind of more the team that would maybe go for the approach that you suggested that Man United would go for, John, where they would kind of sit deeper and use that threat that they have in transition with players like Timo Werner, because they could even just go long to Werner and just that would just pull us back and then create sort of space for other players. And we saw as well, it was Pulisic, wasn't it? He was playing right wing back. That caused us so many problems just because of his ability to dribble. But that the 3-4-3 with, like, I just remember in that game Chelsea's counter press being unbelievable. And I just think that completely nullified Leeds going forward. So I would just, the defensive side of that game from Chelsea was very good, so I wouldn't really change much from that. And then attacking wise, I think Havertz played up front in that game, and I think he was kind of still getting used to playing that centre forward role for Chelsea, but he did seem to, from after that game, I think he did seem to improve as the matches went on, and he was actually very threatening. And I think he kind of played there for Germany as well in the Euros sometimes. So it'd be interesting to see what, because I don't think that is actually the best way of going about beating Leeds is Havertz, because I think he's a player that tends to drop deeper, and maybe that will drag a man out, but we do tend to follow those players well and then cover for them. So I think what we saw in the first game was a player like Giroud causes a lot more problems with his movement in the box, and his because of the quality of players that Chelsea have, they will find Giroud if he makes those movements enough, that that I think that would cause us more problems than a striker like Havertz would.
I guess with the 3-4-3 as well, you can either have, as they did in the second game, Havertz as a second striker dropping in and then two wide players going beyond him, or you could do it like the way that you were talking about with Giroud being like the player who is the focal point, but then you have those two other players who maybe you can have a little bit more flexibility with in the front three. And yeah, I think I tend to agree with you in terms of the way that Chelsea maybe got that wrong, because I think, as you've said, the Leeds man marking system means that a player like Havertz dropping deep, dragging his marker with him, isn't really going to upset the system that much. I think when you're moving Leeds around, if you do it laterally rather than horizontally, it doesn't really change much. I think that the issues always come from when you maybe take Calvin Phillips, for example, out of the middle, which is something Manchester United did well with Bruno Fernandes in the first game. When you move players from side to side, it causes problems. But I think when you do it maybe a little bit more laterally, it's not quite so much of a problem, because you've still got that player in the middle and not creating big spaces in front of goal. Darren, did you want to add anything on Chelsea?
No, I think I sort of largely agree with what's been said. I think that you know, Chelsea kind of largely stayed in a mid block when they played us at Elland Road, and I think that really worked, because it really meant that their intelligent press and their intelligent counter press, excuse me, meant that we went really able to progress the ball through the thirds at all. And I think that one of the things that a team like Chelsea should be able to do is to make sure that within that mid block that Phillips can only receive the ball from the centre backs on Melier, really, and that his only option is to pass backwards or sideways, which I guess really cuts off a lot of, you know, Leeds build up, and means that we just ended up, if you remember, I think we ended up being, you know, really largely boxed in and unable to kind of build up at all or get any attacking threat going. And we were pressed really effectively, I think, in that game. And I think in possession for Chelsea, I think that, or for a team like Chelsea, an elite team playing a 3-4-3, you know, effectively it's a 3-4-3, but with two tens, isn't it, who've got free rein to kind of move around and go cause problems where they think they can find them. And I think that one of the things that Chelsea will be good at is that kind of deep build-up that we talked about earlier, trying to draw the Leeds press out, so splitting the three centre-backs really wide, trying to draw the Leeds press on, and then giving the Leeds press too much ground to cover so that they can isolate the best ball-carrying centre-back and let them drive into the midfield, and then rely on the kind of elite movement and mobility and rotation of those tens and the attacking players to kind of move the Leeds defenders around, like you said, move Phillips away from the centre so that you can get at the centre backs or in the gaps between the centre backs with your two tens. So and also I think because Chelsea have got very mobile front players, if Leeds are managing to get the press working effectively, that will leave gaps where your elite passers can find, you know, kind of balls into the channels, much like Chelsea did in the Champions League final at times, go a little bit more direct and use the kind of pace and mobility and exciting attacking talent of the forward players to cause problems.
Yeah, I think the reason why Chelsea struggled against us maybe in the second game was because they don't really have a centre-back who is going to be able to carry the ball forward and make those dangerous passes. Obviously, I mean, Azpilicueta is obviously like a defensive fullback. He's a fairly good ball playing centre back, but I don't think he's not necessarily going to pick the ball up and go through the middle. And then you've got Thiago Silva, who's about 1,000 years old and obviously a very good passer, but I don't think, and he was the player,
he
I suppose
was the player
he
at,
was
at Stamford
doing
Bridge
that.
Who did it to us as well. He caused us all sorts of problems at Stamford Bridge and just
yeah,
by doing
I think
that.
That's true, but I think maybe the if they were to bring in a centre back who is someone more of the Manchester City mould, so someone like Laporte or Stones, someone who is going to just carry the ball and then try and lay the ball off in really advanced areas, that would cause us loads of problems as well. But I totally agree with you, and we should move on. So let's move to the mid-table sides. So the first mid-table side I've got is a flexible team who plays either 4-2-3-1 or 3-4-3. Not necessarily the best players across the pitch, but a lot of talent and very well drilled. So this you may remind you of a certain Leicester team. Darren, I think we're back at you.
We are, yeah, and I think Leicester were really interesting last season, because in one of the games they found a method in the first game that was very effective against us, and you know, really brutalised us and set a lot of traps which we just walked into. And then in the second game, completely changed their tactical approach. Didn't use that same sort of method at all, apart from for a spell in the second half, and where we managed to get on top of it. And that kind of 3-4-3, it was somewhere between a mid block and a low block, I think. So that they were in a position whereby they forced Leeds to pass the ball laterally very often, and then countered really quickly and really effectively. And obviously in the first game that utilised the pace of Vardy, which is one of their primary weapons when he's fit. And the players in behind him, whether it's Maddison or whoever, to kind of, you know, find the passes, find the intelligent movement and try and kind of feed Vardy worked really effectively. And I think in that first game at Elland Road, they really set a template for themselves, which they then failed to follow in the second game, which I thought was quite interesting.
The 3-4-3 kind of is covered a lot by what we mentioned about Chelsea as well. I think what I do like about this is that you can be flexible. So if you do switch to that 4-2-3-1, if it's not working, that whilst I don't, it wasn't as effective. I think it can cause us problems in other ways. I just think you get Maddison and Barnes higher up the pitch, and those two players cause us all sorts of problems in both games. That I think they scored first in the second game, and I think it was Maddison to Maddison divided to Barnes. I can't some combination like that.
And it was the first time they'd managed to get any of them free in that first game, you know, and they only needed one chance to do it and they scored from it.
Yeah, so if you can get those players just on the ball as much as possible, then I think you're just going to cause Leeds problems.
I think the real benefit of being a flexible team playing against Leeds is that you know however you structure yourselves, Leeds are going to have to respond to that structure. So there's a certain extent to which you can dictate the way that you want Leeds to play. So I think as a manager of a team who are able to do that sort of flexible switch, I would have a look and see that season what the areas that they're struggling in the most, and try and determine which structure really brings out those maybe weaker elements, and then play the system that would work. And I think it's really interesting that when Leicester played the 3-4-3 in the first game, they sort of decimated us. But Rodgers has got into this sort of habit of playing 3-4-3 away from home because it was a little bit more passive, and then at home trying to play the 4-2-3-1 because it was maybe a little bit more of an expansive, positive approach to the game, and that didn't work at all. And to be honest with you, when they did go back to 3-4-3, yes, we did cope with that a lot better than we did the other time. We obviously came away with the win, but I think they still caused us more problems than they did in the 4-2-3-1. So I guess if I was Brendan Rodgers at Leicester next season, I would think seriously about maybe playing the 3-4-3 in both occasions as well.
Yeah, I agree.
Right, the next mid-table side is 4-2-3-1 with a young manager and good talents across the field, who tend to play a fairly ponderous possession football, which is obviously Arteta's Arsenal. Are we back to you, Tom? What are your thoughts about how Arsenal should set up against Leeds?
This is the one that I struggled with the most, because I find Arsenal so just meh. Like, I just is there a tactical identity? They play ponderous possession football. That's just depressing, isn't it? But the way that they caused those problems. So the way you did go about it is just trying to funnel the ball into the wide areas and then just pressing very aggressively, because that will just stop us in build-up and basically mean that we can't attack, and then you can just try and... It's almost like you can't... We weren't kind of a tradition because we never actually attacked. So if you press that wide areas, we win the ball back and then just use... You have got quality players at Arsenal. So I think if you just give them enough chances by doing that, then it will work out. And we saw that with Aubameyang, that he just got enough chances that he was able to score a hat-trick in that second game. Apart from that, like I was struggling to say what to do with Arsenal, because I just don't think they really do anything.
I think they intentionally pressed Melier from our left-back area moving across towards the right-back area. They did that several times. One of the times it ended up leading to the penalty, but they also did it on numerous other occasions, because you're pushing Melier onto his weaker foot, which means that he's trying to pass with his right foot, probably to players who are already picked up, because Arsenal are trying to funnel people to our left. So I think that's something which I think more teams... If they could notice that and try and make sure that Melier is under pressure and that he doesn't just have time to kind of to pick the passes, because we know that if you do give him time and space to pick passes, he'll pick out a large degree of those, you know, good 40-yard balls out to the wide area. So I think that's something to be noted.
I think one thing I was going to add to that as well is that I think they in that game they did put Xhaka, so he's like a back three, and they caused problems that way as well. So that kind of covers the problems that we discussed in the 3-4-3 a bit, that it allows one of the centre backs to dribble out and causes problems. And the thing is, obviously, I think Jack has left or is leaving, so it'd be interesting to see if there is a way that a player that can replace that, because if not, it's one less thing they've got to cause those problems.
It's funny, isn't it? Because I tend to agree with you that Arsenal are a fairly mess side, but I think that was probably the most intelligent win that a Premier League side got against us last season. And I was surprised that we didn't. Maybe this is to do with COVID and it being the end of the season and people being exhausted, but I was surprised that we didn't see other teams just trying to do a really high aggressive player-for-player press from goal kick situations after that point, because against Arsenal, we simply couldn't get the ball out until we just started lumping it long. And we played for that like that for the whole of the first half. And I remember the Arsenal game, we gave away three goals fairly quickly around the halfway mark. I think it will be fascinating to see whether or not other teams have sent their analysts away this summer and said to them, right, we've got to do something different against Leeds. We can't approach them the way that we did. Find some weak areas, see the games where they struggled and see what we can do in terms of a game model to beat them. And I think that aggressive high press where you match players one for one and then leave the weakest player in the back line as the bait ball out, so that the ball has to be pinged in over an opponent, so that you're putting that player under a huge amount of pressure to just bring the ball down and then build up from there. But I think that pretty much covers Arsenal. The other London side who caused us problems last season was West Ham, who beat us both times. I've got them down as 4-2-3-1 with an old manager who plays solid football with two big defensive midfielders in the double pivot. Obviously, West Ham set-piece munched us. I think the majority of the goals they scored against us were set-pieces last season.
Oh, I think all the goals they scored against us were set pieces.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So, Darren.
Yeah, that's it. Keep the game tight. Make sure that you don't give any silly big chances away, that you know, kind of keep leads contained in those wide areas. Definitely, I think West Ham did that really well in both games. Make sure that when Leeds do have the ball in advanced areas wide, that you've got good cover in the middle, and that really they are in that situation where all they can do is lump crosses in. Make sure that you kill all the space and then try and win a couple of set pieces and exploit Leeds' weakness there with your superior delivery. I think they got three corners against us, scored from three corners against us last season, I think I'm right in saying. So I think it's a fairly well-thumbed and well-trodden path for Moyes. It's kind of how he chooses to play football against most teams. And he's, you know, I think he's the kind of dictionary definition of a pragmatic manager, really, in that probably they're not the funnest side to watch. They're not the most entertaining team. But and particularly when they come up against, you know, good attacking teams like Leeds can be, that they're always going to cause us problems because they're going to put the burden on us to break them down. And in all likelihood, because of the way that they kill space, particularly in the middle and funnel us out wide, we're not going to be able to do that.
Yeah, I'd agree with all that. When I was going through this, I just had a set of pieces written in capital letters. But the only thing I would add is I think they also set up in both, I think, because Ben Rama didn't play that much for them, but he played both games against us, I'm pretty sure. And when Lingard joined as well, that caused us a lot of problems because their ability to dribble just causes problems.
I don't have anything to add to this one. I think that this is a sort of game where we know what to expect, and we know that it's going to attack a very specific weakness of Leeds, and so it's just a case of, like you said, make sure that you're concentrating for the set pieces, which seems a bit of a miserable thing to say, but I definitely think that there are areas where West Ham can be got at as well. I think in terms of the structure, obviously the double pivot are the big thing for West Ham, but Leeds largely avoid those areas, so I don't think it necessarily matters that much. So I would be very much of the opinion that, you know, just keep doing what you do, build up the ball down the wide areas and look to cause problems from wide spaces.
I think what a double pivot like West Ham's do really well is they scout that kind of that low ball back to the edge of the box from wide areas that Leeds try and get to. So it means that they're going to kill that as an opportunity for Leeds, really. So, you know, you're not going to get Click arriving late or Rafinha arriving late from the other side without being spotted by one of and covered by one of the double pivot.
And they definitely, as a double pivot, do sort of rotate sideways. So one will drop into one fullback area and one will drop into the other, and that can be a problem if Leeds are trying to do build up in those advanced spaces. But I think it's not particularly guileful football that West Ham are playing, but it is remarkably effective.
I liked how you said that through your teeth were actually gritted then, John.
let's move on to relegation sides. So we've got a few different ones. The first one we've got is promoted sides. So I think for this one, we've got promoted sides who look to actually play quite nice, expressive football, but with perhaps a lower player base. So I've got Brentford, Norwich, and to be honest, Watford probably fit in there as well. I actually contacted David Anderson of Bees Tactics just to ask him what he would do. So I said, how would you beat Leeds? And he said, geez, a few ways scream out to me. Hit the wide space behind fullbacks when the opportunity presents itself, which I guess something we've not really talked about much, in that we know that Leeds have advanced fullbacks, and so there is that weak space that if you can get players in behind them, then you've sort of isolated the lead centre backs in a certain extent. So I'm glad that he's brought that up. He said, happy with a mid block out of possession with Jensen or Norgaard pushing forward behind Tony, and then Brian and Bemo trying to stop easy routes forward into Calvin Phillips and beyond. That's an interesting one we've also not talked about, actually, the fact that Phillips is an important part of the build-up, or the defensive midfield position is. We saw that with Arsenal, right, was that they made sure that the pivot just didn't get any time and space on the ball in build-up phases. So it's interesting that David has highlighted that. And then he says, I'd go with our wing-back 3-5-2 to start asking Kanos to deliver the up-and-down duties on the left and Roslev on the right. Block crosses like our lives depended on it, and then the killer blow after keeping it tight is the deep corners and set-piece blocker routines using Pinnock at the back post firing in back towards goal. It sounds like a fairly sensible approach to me. Trying to get a certain amount of license down the wings, win set pieces and score goals from set pieces from them. So even though we've talked about Brentford and Norwich's teams who are going to try and play, they're still going to, I think, be a level of a defensive awareness from them. They're not just going to come out and try and blow it away. So anyone got any thoughts on how we should approach, how teams like this should approach Leeds?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because last season we were very good at beating the teams below us by and large. You know, we kind of got through those games relatively smoothly, and in order for next season to be stress-free, that's absolutely going to need to be the case again. We can't suddenly develop a kind of blind spot around beating, you know, with all due respect to Brentford and Norwich, who I both think are good clubs and who are actually both teams that I enjoy watching. We do need to be beating those teams. I think it's interesting the thing about trying to get in behind the fullbacks. Because I think that we do tend, Leeds do tend to cover that by dropping either Phillips or Dallas in to sit in that kind of half space, so that they've got the flexibility to move centrally or wider to cover the space. But I do agree that there probably is some joy to be found there in terms of, you know, trying to flood players into that space if you do get a chance to. But by and large, I think I agree with David. I think those for those teams that would be the chance, and especially if they are smart from set pieces and able to get quite a few chances, and you know, if Pontus Janssen particularly is still playing for Brentford, I think it's pretty much, you know, nailed on that he'll eventually score from a corner against us with his 6'5" big massive forehead. So it'd be interesting to see how we kind of counteract that.
Just to clarify, Janssen's forehead isn't 6'5". Janssen is 6'5" and has
No, he's 2 inches and his forehead is 6'3".
Okay, well, let's move on to... So a couple of teams... I think what's interesting about next season is that there may be some traditional Premier League teams who are drawn into the relegation mix a little bit more this time around. I mean, I guess we're talking about Crystal Palace here, who are the narrative heavies in regards to the fact that they're obviously losing a lot of players, a lot of contracts running out over the summer. They're one of their most exciting players, Abiri Eze, who Leeds fans know all too well, is missing the first part of the season because he picked up an Achilles injury back in May. I believe playing five-a-side with his mates, of all things. And they've just brought in a new manager, Patrick Vieira, who doesn't have the most stellar record. So a team who will be probably in the relegation battle. So who are we up to? I think Tom?
I think it's me, yeah.
I'm glad you've gone to Tom first there, because I ain't got a fucking clue what to say for this one.
I'd make 10 signings. That would probably be my first start, so I've actually got a squad. I think it's made even harder by this that they're probably the first game they're not going to have Eze, because he was one that causes a lot of problems in, I think, the first game more in particular. So I think it's keeping it quite simple. I think you're going for a low block, you're just hoping, you know, you're just trying to get the ball to Zaha and Eze if he's available, and then I think you're just hoping for set piece as well, because I think they do kind of have a bit of threat from set piece as well. And I really haven't got much more to go at it than that.
This is a team who just has to low block and hope for the best. I don't think that's necessarily a bad way to go with Leeds. I'll be interested to see how many teams actually do this after last season. Obviously, we saw the same sort of thing happening in the Championship, but a lot quicker, as teams realised that if they tried to go transitional against us, that they were going to lose that battle. So I think a team like Crystal Palace are just going to be a classic example of just sit deep and see what you can get, and hope for the best, which isn't very interesting, but I think might be the best way. That said, I think there are intelligent things that you can do, and we saw Palace do that against us last season. As I've said before, Palace tend to play in a 4-4-2, and they pressed us quite well in wide spaces, so they made sure that Leeds didn't really get any license to move in advanced wide areas. And I think once you do that and you force Leeds to cross, they're on the back foot, they are already at a disadvantage. What you don't want is their players to get the ball on the floor in front of them with space in behind fullbacks, because they are then going to cause you a lot of problems. But if you can prevent that, then you force Leeds to sort of get frustrated and sit deep, make them play one side to the other, don't give them any easy ins. Obviously, it requires a lot of concentration and is hard work, and the odds are that the best you'll get out of it is a draw. But I think for a team possible relegation, that's not a particularly bad odds.
I think whatever you say about Roy Hodgson, and I've said a lot about him over the years, his teams are always defensively difficult to beat and difficult to break down. I have to say, I haven't got the first clue what Patrick Vieira's playing style is like, or what his kind of qualities are as a coach, or anything beyond, you know, kind of cursory glance at his record.
I think he's probably in the same boat, to be honest. So.
Okay.
Right, final one. 4-4-2 with a manager who's famous for playing stodgy but effective football. This may remind you of Burnley, and that would be our intention. We obviously had a game against... We beat Burnley in both games. The first one was a horror show. The second one was a little bit more comfortable. So when it comes to Burnley, Darren, what would you be saying to Sean Dyche?
Well, I listened to the Super 6. Is it Super 6? Podcast, and Sean Dyche did it a few weeks ago. It was really interesting to listen, actually. But he said that... that Pep Guardiola had described playing Burnley as being like a visit to the dentist. And I think that's a really accurate description, because the Burnley home game was awful and the most horrendous thing to watch. And actually, although we beat them quite comfortably at the end of the season, the first half was by no means comfortable, because they got a lot of joy from us by kind of... They actually pressed us high. They pressed us quite high and with intensity, and they're obviously a very physical team. I think where it falls down is quite a lot of the time they won the ball in quite dangerous areas in both games, but they didn't quite have the quality to kind of necessarily do anything down, you know, break us down or create a huge number of chances. But eventually, if they keep kind of pinging balls into Chris Wood or whoever happens to be playing up front for them, they will eventually create chances, and I think there's every chance that Burnley could take a point or three off us this season just by doing the same things that they did in the second half of the home game particularly, and in the first half of the game at Turf Moor. It's not big, it's not clever, it's not cultured, it's not kind of, you know, super smart or intelligent, but again, in similar to West Ham, it can be very effective, and it's been effective enough to keep a club like Burnley, who by, you know, kind of financially have got no real right to be in the Premier League, if you look at it from those points of view, has kept them very comfortably in the Premier League for a good number of years now. So I think Sean Dyche knows his formula a lot better than I do, and I think that he'll just stick precisely to the same formula that's gotten Burnley the success they've had over the last few years.
The coordinated press that they did in both games was sort of like, I don't think they usually do that, but it was something that definitely causes problems, so I would definitely be doing that. And then the balls into Wood, which is kind of similar to what was suggested for Brentford. Sort of like, if you can sort of put that long ball into Wood between sort of the centre-back and the full-back, that eventually they will cause a problem for us, like Darren said. And then it's just sort of your classic 4-4-2 Burnley stuff, isn't it? Like a bit of a low block, and then just try and get a set piece, and eventually I agree with Darren that I don't think it'll be, I think if they got a point or three of us next season just playing that, because it is effective, I think, and I think it does cause us problems.
The other thing that I'd probably you'd be looking for is trying to draw Melier out from corners, because although he took a large number of the crosses at Elland Road, there were a couple where either the Burnley player or a Leeds player got in his way and he wasn't quite able to get something on it, and he was out of his goal. And I think that there is a reasonable chance that if you continue to throw set pieces of that nature in, that will eventually create something where Melier is out of his goal, and it won't be his fault. That's how he's been told to play. No, it won't be Melier's fault. It's just how he's been told to play. But I do think there's a good chance that they could get something from that too.
Burnley are a direct team, and I think direct teams can cause us problems, and I think there's no shame in playing quickly and directly. And I think that there's a lot to be said really for Burnley's high press. Once it doesn't work, drop back into a low block, win the ball back, and then be direct. I think there's enough games where it causes teams problems, and they've stayed in the Premier League for a number of consecutive seasons now, so it clearly works in the long run. So I think there'd be no reason why Burnley should stop playing the way that they usually do. Well, I think that brings us to the end of the podcast. It's been great fun chatting to you lot.
Yeah, now we've decided how to out-tactic Bielsa and given a load of elite football coaches advice about how to beat us.
Don't worry, no one listens to this podcast, so it should be fine. If you enjoyed this and you want to get more of our stuff, then there's plenty of ways that you can do that. We have an Authors List episode being recorded later today, so that will be out later on. That's on our Patreon. We also have a Patreon industry expert interview coming out this week. I'm speaking to Eric Laurie, who is a youth coach at Molde in Norway, but you may know him from Twitter. He's done a fair amount of Twitter writing and has a big following. He's written a piece on potential tactical developments in the future. So where's the next tactical steps coming from? Where are we going to see these next tactical ideas coming from? So Josh and I will be talking to him tomorrow night, I think. So that also will be up on our Patreon at some point. In terms of the weekly episodes, we're going to be doing a couple of primers. So we're going to do a tactics primer, where we talk about tactical ideas that we often just sort of throw into the conversation here, but we're going to be a little bit more specific with them, break them down, tell you what we mean. So if there's any ideas, tactical ideas that we talk about a lot that you want to know more about, do drop us a line and let us know what it is that you want us to do. And we're going to do the same as well with statistics as well. So we'll do a primer episode where we'll say these are the basic statistics that we look at in the aftermath of a game. These are the things that we should be looking at. Here's the way that you qualify what you're looking at with, so you know, you're not making any sort of interpretational errors. So those will be in, I think, the next couple of weeks we'll be doing them. There'll be probably another episode that breaks the two of them up, so it doesn't feel too much like summer revision for you guys. But do get in touch with us if there's anything about those things that you're interested in, because this is your chance to get that bugbear off your shoulders when we always say something like, I don't know, overload to isolate or something like that. What do we actually mean? We'll be going through all of those sorts of things, so do get in touch.
Can I put one on the list, John?
You can.
Can I understand what the tactical meaning of the word inshallah is?
Yeah, I'll add something at the very end on that. But that brings us to the end of the podcast, and all there is for me to do is to say thank you, Darren.
Thank you.
And thank you, Tom.
Thank you very much.
And we'll see you very, very soon.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.